This episode is brought to you by 6 Feet Up, the Python, Django, and AI experts who solve hard software problems. Whether it's scaling an application, deriving insights from data, or getting results from AI, 6 Feet Up helps you move forward faster. See what's possible at 6feetup.com. Hi, welcome to another episode of Django Chat. I'm Will Vincent with Carlton Gibson. Hey, Carlton.
Hello, Will.
And we're very pleased to have Mia from EuroPython join us today. Welcome, Mia.
Hi. Hello, everyone, and thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for coming.
So maybe let's start with a quick pitch. EuroPython, when is it? What do people need to know so they can attend? I'll be there. You'll be there. Everyone should be
there. Yes, exactly. Everyone should be there. EuroPython will be hosted this year in Krakow in July. For those who don't know EuroPython, it's a week of all things Python. So we have 2 days of tutorials, 3 days of talks, and we have 2 days of sprints. This year, sprints will be shared with EuroSciPy. And after that, there will be EuroSciPy in Krakow too. So in case you would like to spend 2 weeks in the beautiful city of Krakow, you have an opportunity to be there. EuroPython is a very big conference. I guess that most of our guests know DjangoCon, which is a smaller conference. EuroPython has 5 to 6 tracks, depending on which year. Apart from talks, we also have open spaces where if you have any idea, you can just write it on a whiteboard, or you can write it digitally, and then you can just gather with people and have some informal discussions. We also have summits, we have social events, speakers dinner, and all fun evening activities. We have piloted sessions for beginners, also for advanced users. So yeah, it's going to be a fun week.
DjangoCon Europe was held just last week or week before in Athens. We had 300 people, just over 300 people there in person. How many people will be in Krakow?
Typically, there are around 1,500 people at EuroPython on-site, plus a few hundred online. We don't know how many people will be there, but we expect that there'll be around 1,500 probably,
okay,
like so in previous years.
It's about 5 times as big.
Yes, exactly. It's quite big.
Okay, so I guess if you're going to be there for all that time, then you've got to manage your energy. What's your number one tip for getting through the week?
Yeah, so I think depends. I'm a night owl and I really like spending my night outside in the afternoons and in the evenings. So I usually skip morning talks. Right. I believe there will be lots of people who like mornings, so they go somewhere every morning to listen to talks, open spaces, etc. I think it's very hard to... because there's so many events and so many things happening. There are many talks, there are many open spaces, informal events, activities in the evening. So I think you can get very easily overwhelmed if you try to attend everything. So you go there every morning at 9 a.m. and then you spend the whole day at the conference. And then in the evening you go for some drinks and whatever. And then you come very late. So I think it's very hard to do it all. So my tip is... I think it's always good to think about what are your top picks, what would you like to visit, watch talks or maybe some other events or something, and then to plan the rest according to your energy and how you feel there in general, because it's very hard to be everywhere and to attend all these events.
So marathon, not a sprint, especially if you were going to stay for SciPyCon afterwards.
Yeah, right.
And if I'm a first-time attendee, what's your top tip for a first-time EuroPython? Because, you know, I've been to a few Django cons, but never been to something quite so large. You know, how do I handle the step up to the bigger environment?
Yeah, I think EuroPython is a very friendly and it's a community conference, so I don't think it's that different from DjangoCon. Of course, it's bigger, so this is one of the things that might be different to you, because there'll be so many rooms and the halls are bigger, all the venues are bigger. I do see how it might be intimidating for someone coming there for the first time, but we also have orientation session for first time attendees. So if you're there for the first time, you can come to the orientation session where you will get some advices, where to go, what to see. But in general, we always remind our attendees of the Pac-Man rule, which means that if you are standing somewhere with a group of people, you should always leave an empty space. So if someone would like to come and join, then they can, you know, just fill in the gap. And my experience in general is that people are very nice and friendly, and you can just go and talk to everyone. I think open spaces might be more interesting for first-time attendees because they are small. So you are there in a smaller group of people. So maybe like, I don't know, 10, 20 people, depending on how many are there. So it's a very nice opportunity to chat with some people. You can all introduce yourself. You can talk about topics you're passionate about. It can be something about tech, maybe your favorite technologies, maybe something like that, or it can be even something unrelated. So I think that's a nice opportunity how to talk to people. Apart from that, we also have community booths. So this is a section with many communities where you can go and talk to them. Every year we have the Django Software Foundation. Yep. And we have also some other ones. For example, we have PyLadies, we have National PyCons, we have other foundations and OSS nonprofits. So if you're a member of some community, for example, if you're a PyLady or if you're a GSF member, you can also go there, chat with people, find out what are they up to. So I think this is a nice experience as well. I would maybe like to ask Will about his experience because last year Django celebrated 20 years, if I remember correctly. And yeah, we had a small celebration with a cake in the open spaces, and the GSF was also our community partner. So I would maybe like to ask Will if he could share his experience.
We might have to wait for him to come back, though, because the internet is struggling, folks. So that's why Will keeps dropping in and out and hasn't said too much at the moment. But he'll be back, and when he does, we will ask him back. So the point being that there's lots of, you know, you just go and join in and whatnot. I always think that as programmers, we're all introverts, right? We're not all introverts, right? Some of us are slightly more gregarious now, but most of us are introverts. It's all that awkwardness, but it's everyone feels like that, right? So it's not just, if you're shy, just go on, put yourself out.
I think always like when you go somewhere you feel a bit shy, you know, and you are hesitating to approach people to talk to them, but once you start you see that it's not actually that bad. We also have a quiet room and we have a low stimulation room, so if you would like just to sit in quiet and just to, you know, recharge, just to spend some time isolated from everyone without any external stimuli, this is also an option. So I would also like to encourage everyone who feels like they need some quiet just to go there and to hide, to recharge their batteries before going back.
Okay, that sounds brilliant. That sounds brilliant. So we wanted to talk about the keynotes, but before we do, I've got an interesting question about the language summit, because it always used to be held at PyCon US every year, right? But there's a new arrangement to alternate between EuroPython and PyCon. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, so there is a new arrangement from this year. The language summit will be alternating between PyCon US and EuroPython. This is to give an opportunity to more people to attend because some people cannot get to the US now for other reasons. The language summit is a summit where all CPython core developers gather and they talk together about topics that are relevant to them. They talk about the roadmap, so what's new happening. They have discussions on various features, and we are super happy that this year we are hosting the language summit and that we will have so many core developers among us.
But it's one of like the big things that push forward Python, right? I think.
Yeah, I think this is one of very big things because this is the place where everyone gathers. So this gives them an opportunity to talk about features and to have those discussions. But it's also a lot about hallway tracks, what I was told by them, because they're all at the one place so they can discuss, spark new ideas and such stuff. Well, you also attend DjangoCon Sprints. So I guess you have a similar experience with that.
Yeah, well, I mean, the sprints are where it all happens in the end, because you get that small amount of time to spend together, and it's such high bandwidth compared to what you can do on the issue tracker or, you know, a mailing list or this forum discussion that it really works. This is why we're doing Django on the Med. I must put in a little punt there. So go on then, tell us about the keynotes, because they're quite exciting.
Yeah, we have some quite exciting keynoters to announce. So in general, we have 6 slots because we are a big conference, 3 days. So we have 2 slots a day. I can announce now our first keynote speakers who have already confirmed their attendance. So this year, for the first time, Guido van Rossum is coming to Poland and he will be our keynote speaker. We are having a special Core Pi episode with Guido and with Bukash Langa and Pablo Galindo Salgado, who will be hosts of the podcast. So they will record an episode on stage.
Okay, that's really cool. That's really cool. We've always been too shy to do a Django chat live at a Django convent. That's amazing. How did you bag Guido? That's a real...
Yeah, so Guido is coming because of the language summit and there will be some more core developers around. So we asked Guido if he would like to give a keynote at EuroPython alone or if he would like to record an episode on stage. And he said that he would prefer to record an episode. Lots of us thought that actually it would be very hard to persuade him because we know that he is not really into attention. He doesn't really like he doesn't really like when people approach him and ask him for selfies and, you know, this kind of thing. So we were a bit hesitant, but we thought, why not give it a try and, you know, just pitch this idea to him. And we were lucky that he said yes. So I think this is going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it is. It's super cool. I heard about I was like, wow.
Yeah, I also like that this will be an informal chat. This is basically a podcast episode, so it will not be some like very prepared presentation, which I think would be very interesting to see some other side of him. I have listened to lots of podcasts with him and I have heard lots of his talks. And I'm a big fan of those informal conversations because I think if something is not prepared, and also as a conference speaker, I have this experience that if something is informal that you have like more opportunities to ask more questions, some things, you know, just pop up, so some questions just pop up on the fly. So I think this is going to be pretty cool. We have 5 more keynote slots at this moment. I cannot announce any of those. We are working on confirmations from those keynote speakers, but you can follow us on social media for more info. We'll be announcing them in the upcoming weeks.
This portion of Django Chat is brought to you by 6FeetUp. What's stopping you? Maybe it's an application that won't scale or an AI initiative that just isn't delivering. That's where 6FeetUp comes in. With deep expertise in Python, Django, and AI, they solve hard software problems, modernize platforms, and get teams to market faster. Their impact speaks for itself. Automating healthcare pipelines for hospitals, helping NASA explore Pluto, building severe weather prediction tools, and applying AI to connect farmers with vital crop data. When the stakes are high and the problems are hard, 6FeetUp is the partner that delivers. See what's possible at 6FeetUp is the partner that delivers.
Mia, you mentioned about beginner sessions that you have. That's included some Django Girls sessions over the years, right?
Yeah, exactly. So Django Girls started at EuroPython in 2014. And in 2024, we had 10 years of Django Girls. So we had a small celebration at EuroPython. And we also had the workshop. We held a workshop last year as well. So every year we have workshops for underrepresented groups in programming. Sometimes it's Django Girls, sometimes it's Humble Data, sometimes it's PyLadies workshop, sometimes it's all of those. So this year we are going to have some workshops too. And for those who don't know Django Girl workshops, those are workshops for beginners where they have an opportunity to create a web in one day. There's a mentor who is able to help them with everything. They get documentation and the web is a surprise, surprise Django.
Obviously, you know, you got to build it in something. I didn't know that Django had, so I knew Django had done, Django Girls had done 10 years. And in those 10 years, over 25,000 women have been through Django Girls workshops globally, which is amazing, right? But I didn't know it started at EuroPython.
Yeah, I think that's super cool. So the workshop started in 2014 in Berlin. There were 2 Polish women, Ola Sitarska and Ola Sendecka. And they decided to use Django and Python and to create workshop to help women to develop their ideas. And since then, the initiative has spread through many countries throughout the world. Yeah, which I think is super cool.
Super cool. And I don't know if Will's going to be able to join us again. He's got the internet problems, but he was there last year when Django had his birthday party at EuroPython, which was nice for the open space type thing, right?
Yeah, so at the open space, there was a cake. So they had a small celebration where they ate cake and gathered all together. Unfortunately, I couldn't be there because I was at a different place at that time. And there was also another cake that was on Wednesday evening when there was a social event which was organized in collaboration with the local Python community. We have in Prague, we have events called Pivo. I'm based in Prague, and last year EuroPython was in Prague. So our events are called Pivo, which is a monthly gathering of Python enthusiasts. And it's held every third Wednesday in a month, which was last year exactly the Wednesday when EuroPython was taking place in Prague. So we had a gathering in a very nice beer garden. It was outside because it was very nice and sunny and warm. And we also ordered a cake, so we had a small cake and we were all singing "Happy Birthday, Django."
Fantastic.
It was super funny because we cut the cake. There was someone, you know, cutting the cake. And so we all went there to grab a piece. And because this was in an open beer garden where we booked 200 places, but they were also like, it was open for public. And some other people who were not part of the group came there and were like, oh, can we also have a piece of cake?
This is guerrilla marketing. This is how you get the new people on board, right?
Yeah. Because only if you use Django.
Well, okay, that's reasonable. There was a Django birthday sort of celebration all year, and so there was a site that listed all the places around the world that held a little birthday event. We had one in Palavagel for Django on the Med, so we had a Django pony pinata, which took some bashing to.
Right. I remember there was a celebration at DjangoCon Europe as well. I was in Dublin, and there was also a cake.
Yeah. So anyway, Django. Right. You've mentioned you've got your own podcast, right?
Yeah. So I have a very small YouTube channel. Basically, I travel a lot and I get to talk to some cool people building very cool technologies. So I have a podcast where I record informal chats with open source maintainers across Europe and beyond. It's called Behind the Comet. So feel free to check it out. It's on YouTube and it's on all podcasting platforms.
Okay, and we'll put the link in the show note there. You enjoying making that? It's quite a lot of work, right? It seems like nothing.
Yeah, it's way more work than I expected. Post-processing takes so much of time, even with all the AI and all the technologies you can use. It's way more work than I expected, but it's fun.
Yeah, no, it's cute. Right, so we've got into a habit, Mia, of talking about books on the show, just what we've been reading, what we've been doing. So you've got a couple I see in the list in the notes.
Yeah, so I love reading and I'm always happy to receive recommendations for books. I was thinking what kind of books to recommend, and there are two books that I read many years ago and that I really like and that stayed in my memory. So one of the books is called Humble Pie: When Math Goes Wrong in the Real World by Matt Parker. This book is very interesting because it's written by a stand-up comedian and mathematician, which is a very rare and very unique combination. And he talks about all sort of funny and not so funny accidents or cases where there were some math errors which were obvious, but maybe not that visible. So I found there lots of very interesting stories. And the second book is called The Design of Everyday Things by John Norman. And I thought that this would be a book about design and that this would be a very like technical book. However, this is a book that actually really made me think about why are things designed the way they are designed? Because people use things not the way they're supposed to be used, but the way they are designed. So there were lots of examples about things which might not be logical, but they are designed in a certain way because, for example, for historical reasons, for cultural reasons, or maybe only because someone was lazy and they just designed it in some way and then everyone uses it in that way just because that's how it's been designed. So I totally recommend it because after reading this book, I started more thinking about the things I designed, whether it's a website or a button on a website or a physical object. I started thinking actually how is this going to be used? And is this the way it's supposed to be used? Or is it just like my mindset, how I imagine that it should be used? So I can totally recommend both books. Have you read any of those?
I've read The Design of Everyday Things. I haven't looked at The Humble Pie, so I can check that one out.
Did you like it?
Design of Everyday, it's amazing. Like as you were just saying about whether it's websites or it's like, even if it's a function, you know, you've got to design the API of the function so it's called in the way that it's meant to be called, right? What's this phrase? The pit of success. You've got to design for the pit of success. You've got to make sure that people fall into it. And there's just so much in there. And it particularly, if you're working on UIs, things like giving an indication that something's happening, giving feedback that something did happen, like these kind of principles that it puts forward there, they just make you a better designer. It's not about graphic design, right? It's not It's not about how things look necessarily, but it's about how they work. So that's a wonderful.
I think lots of things are obvious from the user perspective, but when you're designing them, they're not obvious to you. And this book made me think about this, actually. Like, is this obvious from both and all perspectives or only from mine?
Yeah, no, super. So that's a great suggestion. I've got one. I'm Hands on Rust, it's called. I haven't got the actual physical book, so I just got an ebook, but it's by Herbert Warburton. It's from the Pragmatic Programming book publishers. Hands on Rust. It's a introduction to the Rust programming language that you build a game with it. And it's a few years old now, but it's still, you know, Rust is a nice stable language now, and it's not, you know, it does evolve, but you know, the learning of it doesn't really evolve very much anymore. And I'm going through it with my 15-year-old. They were busy compiling drivers for their graphics card and downloading Python and doing all this thing. And they were like, right, come on, let's work through this. So we're doing a chapter a week with that. And I read it a few years ago, and it's a great book. And it's quite good fun to be going back through it. So I can really recommend it if you're looking to pick up Rust. And you know, you get to do something fun. You're building games rather than just going through a tutorial. So it's good. And at the end, you know, you can be compiling it to WASM and running it in your browser or, you know, whatnot. So that's so cool. Hands on Rust by Herbert Warburton.
Oh, that sounds super cool. I was also searching for some materials on learning Rust. So thank you for the recommendation.
It's a good book. It's a good book. And it builds up. There's a nice learning curve to it. I mean, you know, Rust is supposedly a more difficult language. Well, it builds up in a way that makes it.
It requires more thinking.
Yeah, you have to reason through the ownership problems and things like that. So anyway, it's quite good fun to go through it with my son. So that's cool. Right, I guess we should round up. Will's texting me to say he's got an area issue with the internet in his Brooklyn. So I don't know what's going on there, but so he can't join us for the rest of the show. But so just to wrap up, if I'm interested in EuroPython, what should I look out for? How can I find out more?
So ticket sales are already open, so you can already purchase your ticket. We are on all social media. We have a website, europython.eu. On social media, our handle is europython, so feel free to check out our YouTube channel. We have lots of videos from previous editions, so you can have a look just to see what kind of talks were there. We also record shorts. You can also have a look at the program, which is also released on our website. And you can follow us on all other social media.
Okay, so europython.eu, and we'll put that in the show notes as well. Well, Mia, thank you for joining us. I hope the conference goes well. I'm sure it will. It sounds very exciting. You know, you'll have to let us know how it goes.
Thank you for inviting me. It was my honor, and I am super happy to see you all at EuroPython.
All right, take care. This was Django Chat. Join us next time, folks.
Thanks again to 6FeetUp, the Python, Django, and AI experts you call for the hardest software problems. From scaling applications to simplifying data complexity and unlocking AI outcomes, they help you move forward faster. See what's possible at 6FeetUp.com.